This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is Jane Storsetter, who has a really important story about her daughter and about how mothers deal with children who really need special attention in order to function optimally in this world. So, Jane, I'm just going to go to you. And I know you said you were a native San Franciscan.
Yes, I am.
Okay, your grandfather came here when?
He came here, was invited here in 1939. This is on one side mm-hmm. of the family. Mm-hmm. And he was he had come from Australia mm-hmm. and brought, at the World's Fair, he came for the World's Fair and brought opals. He was
oh,
the first one to be
sure.
bring opals
yes.
into Australia, along with the first one to bring koala bears into,
really?
into the California area.
Living one for the zoo?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That is really interesting. Okay, so you've been here. You were born here. You've been here forever as far as your life is concerned. Tell me about your children. How many? You have three?
I have four children.
Four children. Uh-huh.
Three boys and a girl.
Okay. And is the girl the youngest?
No, she's the second youngest.
What is her name? What are your children's names?
All right. Andrew's the first. Mm-hmm. Andrew, he's 32. Jean Marie, 34. Mm-hmm. Jason, 40. And Bruce, 43.
Okay, tell me about, because I know this is something we're going to talk about at length, as much as we can, Jean Marie. Tell me about her from her birth. I know that she, and I don't know what the problem is that you were faced with, so you say.
Jean Marie was actually born fine. Mm-hmm. When she turned four, she developed rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh.
And rheumatoid arthritis is really a very bad disease. I don't think enough people really study it.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it's actually, you know, they talk about AIDS. It's worse than AIDS. Most children don't last past 13 years old. She has a systemic type, juvenile rheumatoid, systemic.
And how does that affect her?
Well, systemic affects the organs, mm-hmm. the bones, and the blood, and the joints.
What happens with organs and blood?
Well, it can actually attack, it can attack the blood and or the organs. When it attacks the organs, it can cause, in the lungs, it's caused pneumonia.
Oh, so it sounds like you're saying it is an autoimmune.
It's an autoimmune,
condition.
Yes, disease.
Uh-huh. How was this? What were your first hints?
Well, my first
I think this is important so parents know what to look for in case they don't.
Well, and yes. And another thing to bring up is the fact that my daughter got this 2 weeks after she got her child immune shots. And I really feel that was the cause of it. She 2 weeks after she got it, she started to limp around and said her knee hurt her and her foot hurt her. And this went on through the summer, and it progressively got worse till she was dragging her foot. Mm-hmm. I took her into the doctors. They thought she had a bone infection, mm-hmm. and it turned out to be rheumatoid arthritis.
Uh-huh.
At the time, there was only like 300,000 children that had this.
So sounds like a lot.
Yes, the doctors researched everything. Lyme disease, they went through everything. And it took quite a while to realize that she had rheumatoid arthritis.
How do they come to that pinpoint diagnosis?
Well, after testing everything else, they started doing tests on the bones and the blood. The blood shows, you can find it in the blood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a lot of times they also have more white cells than red blood cells.
Which could be infection anyway, right?
Right, right.
Uh-huh. So it's kind of hard. You were talking before about terminology. Is there a problem here with terminology in this condition? That it changes from time to time, or it's always been?
Yes. Well, no, not as far as this goes.
Okay.
They have changed the name of it. I don't know what it is right now anymore, but it used to be juvenile systemic rheumatoid arthritis.
But it always is connected with arthritis.
It's always connected with
as opposed
with
to
rheumatoid.
Down syndrome that used to be called something else, and
exactly.
That was not politically sensitive. And I see. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So what happened next with her once you got a diagnosis?
Well, after that, they started treating her different type of prednisones to start with, aspirin. The aspirin had a tendency to just kind of I guess she had a reaction to that, so it blew up the tissues. She had mm-hmm. issues with that. The prednisone lowers your immune system, right. So she ended up at one point with pneumonia and a hole in her lungs.
Oh, how old was she?
At the time, she was 9 years old.
Oh, how does she respond to all this?
Well,
I mean, children take so many things as just normal when it has to do with them, but...
No, when she first was diagnosed and first got it, she was in horrible pain, and mm-hmm. she didn't deal with it. Mm-hmm. She hid in the corner and room in the dark.
Oh.
And it was the point where, you know, I didn't know what to do. So I finally started introducing music. I put on little children's music tapes.
Was she in the dark because the light bothered her, or she just wanted to hide from the world?
She wanted to hide from the world, and she was just in so much pain that she couldn't function, literally. Uh-huh. And so, you know, this isn't trying to deal with the medications and what worked and what didn't. I finally brought in an art and music therapist, which started to pull her out of her pain and put mm-hmm. her mind on other things. Mm-hmm. That helped a great deal.
Mm-hmm. That's important to know. I wonder how many parents would think of this. Is this something that doctors by now would be recommending?
No, but there's two things. I think art and music's very important. It really does help children in pain. Mm-hmm. They have found that. And there's quite a few music therapists now for children.
Yes.
And she also, Liz Domash was her name. She's still a therapist, and she uses different puppet play. Mm-hmm. And that kind of brings out the anger and you know, mm-hmm. why do I have this disease?
And you could tell that she felt like this.
Yes, uh-huh. absolutely.
Ugh, I don't blame her.
Absolutely.
So how did her life progress here? She must be missing a lot of school.
Yes, she was homeschooled in a lot of pain for quite a few years. This brings in a high fever. The main thing that dealing with the school system, because with these high fevers, which is like a systemic fever, I'm talking like 105, 106, the weather affected as well. I had issues with the school. Fighting with the school. Well, one day Jean would be very ill with this high fever, like she had a flu. The weather would clear up. All of a sudden, the next day, she'd be okay, tired, but would be okay, and she'd go to school. So trying to explain to the school system that she has these fevers, it was a really real struggle trying to deal with it.
What was the struggle? I mean, what did they want?
Because they didn't believe a child, you know, 1 minute can be deathly ill and then be fine the next day to go to school. So she missed a lot of school over the years. Writing letters, I had to actually get a doctor to explain the disease.
I was wondering about that.
I had to educate the teachers on the type of disease, what it's all about. The teachers really don't take time to understand when these children are sick. Mm-hmm. Jean Marie's kind of caught in the middle between children with Down syndrome and a normal child because she's physically mm-hmm. disabled. It's really hard to find a spot for her. Mm-hmm. To find support for her is difficult. At one point, the struggle for being sick and dealing with the teachers, I found a group, support group for parents with special children, mm-hmm. which really did help me.
Oh, good.
The only issue was that Jean Marie was still caught in the middle. Uh-huh. So there were certain things. They helped me write IEPs to help Jean Marie.
What are IEPs?
IEPs are right. Special educational programs in the school system. It's for the child's needs. Mm-hmm. So you learn to what they need, what they don't need. Uh-huh. Jean Marie's fingers were all crippled, so Jean Marie couldn't write.
Oh,
so she needed help with writing.
Uh-huh. And the teachers couldn't just see that on their own?
No, because what happens is some of the medication, she had to switch different medications. Uh-huh. If they wouldn't work, then they would work. And I noticed with the aspirin, it just made Jean Marie completely numb, uh-huh. where she couldn't think. Mm-hmm. So one teacher said, well, she's plain stupid. She doesn't know her alphabet yet.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to deal with this and explain the
medication.
What
year was this, may I ask?
She was just first grade at the time.
And so this was 60s.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's so hard to think back that there was such really stubborn stupidity among the... So what happened as she got older? How long was she homeschooled? And did you do that yourself, or did you hire somebody?
Jean Marie, I finally learned how to write IEPs, which was helpful. When she was very ill when she was young, there was a point where she was home. The steroids ruined all her joints. So she's had knee, ankle, shoulder, hip replacements, a few fingers, a wrist. Yes, she's had a lot
of... hugely difficult.
A lot of replacements in a wheelchair. I got the mental support from the support for special parents, how to write the IEPs, but it came to the point when it was really up to me to do it. When Jean,
was there ever a point at all this that you, I mean, mothers just can't throw up their hands and say, I give up. But how close can you come to saying, there's nothing I can do, and then making that shift into, damn right there is, and I'm going to find out what it is.
Well, when it came to the point, it almost absorbed my life. I mean, taking care of her and waiting on her in the horrible pain she was in. You know, I got the support from the support group.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, finally you realize, all right, you know, we have to get going on this ourselves.
And how did her brothers, how were they affected by this?
Her younger brother was affected a lot. At mm-hmm. one point, we had to take him to a child psychologist because mm-hmm. he was actually pulling his hair out of his head.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out...
I'm surprised you weren't.
Well,
yeah.
I had a lot of struggle myself. I got ill at one point, and
sure.
that was the turning point where I had to realize I had to take care of myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, when the doctor said, you're going to get ill, you can't keep this up...
Mm-hmm.
I finally started to get more support. I got, instead of driving my daughter, I was able to get a bus to take her to school.
Mm-hmm.
I got support groups. I got involved with the Arthritis Foundation. And my daughter and I at one point became advocate for parents whose children had just developed rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of helped support them in the issue. We wrote letters. I was able to, I had to fight the school system the whole time. In fifth grade, I was able to get her a one-on-one aide,
mm-hmm.
which the principal and the teacher said, you'll never do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after writing letters,
and the principal said, you'll never do it, instead of saying, let me see if I can help you in some way?
She said, you'll never be able to do it.
Oh, good Lord.
Because my daughter needed help getting her books out,
sure,
writing her
sure.
notes, because she was handicapped with the hands,
mm-hmm.
Going to the restroom. She needed help
sure.
with all that.
So at what point did you keep her home for homeschooling? What
she
grade
was home.
Was she
all right. She was homeschooled when she was in third and fourth grade,
mm-hmm.
on and off. She missed third grade, which was so socially important for a child. She was very, very ill, had lost her hip bones,
mm-hmm.
and I kept her, and I homeschooled her myself, and then I got one of the teachers to come over and give me the curriculum so I could
yes.
follow up in the curriculum, so she kept up with
the
class.
Did she have any friends, children, who would come visit her, or was she more or less isolated at that
She was isolated, but what I started doing is bringing her, inviting her friends
yes.
over on the weekends. She used to have big birthday parties with uh-huh. her whole class from
uh-huh.
the school, so I was able to keep her in with
yes.
her friends, which
uh-huh.
was really important at that time. For
her. And she is, well, so as life went on, I gather she's doing more or less okay.
Well, I've taught her to be very independent.
Mm-hmm.
And at 18, she and a girlfriend found these Todco apartments that have handicap apartments.
Oh.
And she signed up as when they were first coming out. That was 15 years ago. They were opening up. And she
Does that mean like ramps for wheelchairs?
Yeah,
and
ramps.
Things
yeah,
that are easy to reach.
Elevator. Like,
mm-hmm.
And you can wheel right into the stalls, the shower stalls.
Ah, I see.
So she said, Mom, I'm leaving. I'm tired of my brothers picking on me.
Oh, good for her. And good for you. And how terrifying that must have been.
It was terrifying. I was really worried about her. But I had worked really hard to make her independent.
Well, that's the problem with parents and making them independent. You want them to be independent. And then when they say goodbye and look like they've taken on more than they can handle...
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was a struggle the first few years that she was on her own.
For her or for you?
For me and
yes,
her,
yes.
you know. She went through a lot of hardships,
mm-hmm.
A lot of incidents she got into that a mother had to help get out of,
okay,
you know.
Okay, well, thank God you're still there to do it.
Well, yes. That is the thing I worry about now. You know, I've made her independent. Mm-hmm. She works at the San Francisco Zoo right now, you know. We still fight the prejudiceness of excuses that there's not enough work. They put her on call all the time, mm-hmm. you know, and on call, which means she doesn't know whether she's going in or not.
Right.
And it's very hard because she's trying to support herself.
Yes.
She's not on SSI or anything. I want her to be independent and do this.
Well, what does she do at the zoo when she is there?
She's like in customer service. Mm-hmm. She works the tickets. She greets people, you know, at the entrance gate.
Mm-hmm.
She works by the puffer train. And,
yes.
Greets people.
That's important. Those people who greet are the first ones who make you feel comfortable in any area.
Well, she's been trained in all the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
She's been trained in the office. She worked in the office for a while, on the carousels, different jobs.
And is this all from a wheelchair, or she doesn't always need the wheelchair?
It's all from, she can, now she has new hips. She can get out of the wheelchair and walk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's painful in her back because mm-hmm. she has scoliosis, but she can get out. She brings the wheelchair to work because it's easier to get around
mm-hmm.
and quicker.
Sure.
But I find that we've had to talk to the head of the zoo because at one point they were just being prejudiced and they stopped her from working as much.
How do you get the idea that it's prejudice? That is making them.
All right.
Do they phrase things?
It seems like people use her disease as an excuse. Oh, she can't do this and that. Jean Marie's been trained in all the fields.
So they
she
say
knows
she
how
can.
To do everything.
Uh-huh.
And at one point, they started just giving her less and less work. Jean had seniority over the other people, being there for 15 years. And all of a sudden, new people are coming in and taking over jobs, taking over her job.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to actually talk to the head lady at the time. And she finally got Jean an office job so she could be working all the time. And, of course, the office job, after a while, they just said, well, we didn't need you anymore, and stopped the job.
So this is kind of an ongoing.
It's ongoing.
Until she finds herself a place where it's permanent and counts on her very many skills.
Well, she feels it's very difficult,
right.
Being with her physical disability.
I'm
it's
sure
very
it
difficult
is.
To have
yes.
to find other jobs.
It sounds like it. Now, obviously, I shouldn't say obviously. I should never say obviously in life. Nothing's ever obvious. You should assume nothing. Holidays. You're all together?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. She's usually with us on holidays and birthdays,
yes.
and we get together
yes.
with her.
So,
yes.
you know, thank goodness. I mean, she has a strong, strong family life. And the support of a mother who is a tiger. Yes,
well,
not in the zoo kind.
You know, I'd like to say to parents that
please.
There are supports out there. It's hard to find, but you can look for them. I think the hardest thing are there's a lot of support. Golden Gate Regional is a lot of support for children with Down syndrome.
Where's the support for mothers? Because, as my mother used to say, you'll always take care of your children. I'm taking care of you. In other words, you know, grandparents who sometimes
mm-hmm.
make a special effort to look after their grandchildren. And their children, even adult children, kind of get lost in the generational shuffle. You'll take care of her. Who parents will take care of their children? Who is it exactly who keeps the parents strong? Those supports. Maybe we should say those.
Well, my wonderful husband has helped me out.
Oh, that's so
that
good.
For sure,
yes.
Number one. I'll tell you honestly, some of the support groups help, but all the support groups I've gone to really don't. The issues that they have with their children are different.
Mm.
And I found with the support groups, just listening to other parents and some of their
okay.
issues. At least I feel like my daughter is a very intelligent young lady
mm-hmm.
and she can function mentally, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of these children can't. But there's a place for those children, and there's no place for the child in the middle.
Oh, so again, I see.
So, you know, you're either in a regular system where you're an intelligent child physically and mentally,
mm-hmm.
or
You're totally helpless.
You're totally helpless, yeah. But the children in the middle don't have enough support. Mm-hmm. You can go to support groups. They help you because you listen to the way those children are, and I thought, my goodness, my child at least can think, and she could hold a job because she's mentally fine.
And knowing that you're not alone. I'm guessing that dealing with the schools was the hardest part.
Yes. Dealing with the schools, dealing with government issues for SSI. At one time, she was on SSI when she first moved out of the house and stuff. They don't really give you enough to live on.
Right.
But my support... What I did was I joined the San Francisco Gem and Mineral Club just to keep my sanity. Mm-hmm. I exercised to keep my sanity. And I pray to God. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, well, with my background, sometimes I used to say, help me get through, because at this point, I don't know how I'm going to deal with it.
Well, when you say with your background, you pray to God and you say with my background, what is that?
Well, I went to... Convent of the Sacred Heart on Broadway.
Oh, so you're saying a religious background.
Religious background, that's
and that
right.
stood you in good...
That kept me going, the belief in God, and he was sort of my main support there.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, what can I say?
Well, you
know,
said,
you try and stay strong for your
said
child.
A lot. But I think that's huge, that if you stay strong, if you let yourself go and you fall into the pit of just hopelessness... then you're all sunk. So, you know, motherhood with its ferocious protectiveness, if you stay strong, it's your best hope of being there for your child.
Well, I think like I had mentioned to you before, at one point I started to get very ill, and I realized after talking to the doctor, if you don't stay strong,
who's going to look after you?
Right. Who's going to take care of your children?
Well, I want to thank you for telling us about this. And I hope that parents who are listening to this, or people who know parents who are going through any kind of difficulties with children, who are you know, stricken by any kind of physical or mental difficulty, will get some strength from this, and have the courage to stick to fighting with the schools if you have to. It's so sad that you have to fight. But whatever you have to do, you're a brave, brave woman. And I wish this were a television moment, because to look at you with that beautiful smile, and you are just so clearly taking good care of yourself.
I try.
Yes, I'm trying to turn this into a television moment. Let me ask you something, because this is about love letters and the power they have even to heal a momentary crisis or a life of difficulty. If you were to write a love letter tonight, I hope you will, who would it be to?
My husband.
Okay. And you would tell him what?
I write my husband's love letters once in a while anyway.
Good.
He's really my rock and my foundation.
Yes.
I don't know what I'd do without him. And I tried to let him know that I do love him all the time. And just thanking him for being that foundation to keep me strong and just to keep going, because he's been there for me.
Now, see, now here's a nice point in how sometimes people say, how long should a love letter be? Four sentences is great if that says what you have to say. I think, what's his name?
Leif.
Leif?
Or her. He's Norwegian.
As in L-E-I-F.
Her Leif. Yes.
L-E-I-F. Leif. Okay. Dear Leif, I don't know what you call him. Do you call him that? Or
Leif, yes.
Sweetheart?
Honey. Or
yes. Dear Leif, you are still my rock and my foundation. Just a little note once in a while. That's wonderful. What about a love letter to your daughter? Have you ever written to her?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. And I've just told her that I love her dearly. Mm-hmm. And the struggle and the things that she's gone through, I really don't know how she manages. Mm-hmm. You know, I have back issues and just a little bit of pain in my back. And here this child has every joint in her body aching.
Yeah.
And yet she's so strong and she goes on and
she works.
Do you ever
say it just like that?
I do.
Dear,
I tell her
in a letter that she'll have it to look at when she's
should do it in a letter.
Wouldn't
you
that
know,
be nice?
I've written letters in the past. I've sat down and written letters to my sons when they've had problems in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written them and told them that I love them and just keep going. And the same, I haven't written letters to my daughter, really, but I do it to everyone else. My husband,
so
my
kids.
So could
you do that?
I will.
We had a guest once here who simply wrote a love letter, simply. It was 101 reasons that he loved his wife. And it was so powerful. It was adorable. Some of them he wouldn't read because they were just too sexy and it was between them. But just to sit down and say, here are the things I have always loved about you. And then her good qualities. And then maybe down the line, here are the things I've always admired about you. And she'll have that. And when she's an old woman and you're no longer here, she will be able to bring that letter out for all of her life and see it in your handwriting and hold something that's felt the touch of your hand and know that you are still with her.
I think that's wonderful. I really should. I tell her, but sometimes I think she gets down and depressed and says, this isn't fair. You know, I have to
remind her. That's right. Of course, and it isn't. But a love letter, you won't be there when she reads it. So she won't be in any position to say anything back to you. It'll just be, I hope you will do that pronto. Sure. You're nodding. Okay, good.
Yes, yes.
And sometimes
I will, and I think that maybe that's the best thing that I could do for her, really.
And for you?
Yes.
Why? Because while you are writing this letter, you will be sitting and bathing in all the positive about her. And somehow, the things that are difficult and all the can't-dos won't be in your heart and your head while you're writing all the things she can do.
No,
it's really like a miracle moment.
No, I think it's wonderful, and I think it's the best thing I could do for her.
Yes, and for you.
Because, you know, when a child's
and
sick...
And for me, because I want you to...
Well, when a child's sick, you become their caregiver, mm-hmm. not really their mother. They're mm-hmm. disciplinarian, mm-hmm. their caregiver. And we don't have that relationship
yes.
like a lot of other parents
That's
have.
That's right. And this can be normal. And this can be a dear, however you want to call, you know, whatever name or affectionate name or her name you use. This is from mother to daughter and woman to woman.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Why I've written love letters to everyone else but my daughter.
Because it's hard.
Yes, it is.
Because it's hard because her need is so huge for the difficult things. But if you get yourself, take a side step away from that and just function on the other her.
I'm going to go home, sit down, and write a letter.
Perfect.
Really?
Perfect. Here's what I love about
great.
You.
That's great.
I mean, I don't know what she looks like. I don't know. You know, what color eyes she has. I don't know what her skin tone is, what her smile looks like. Even the physical, you know, how beautiful you look when you're wearing that particular color. Everything you can think of. And if it's too many things, you can just say, you know, my hand's tired from writing now. I'm going to send you another one next week.
That's great.
Oh, thank you.
That's wonderful.
Will you let me know?
I will.
And
thank you.
And you don't,
I appreciate
what
it.
What do you get to expect in return when you write a love letter like that?
Nothing.
That's right.
Because it's a,
I won't. Because it's a gift.
That's right.
Just like when you send a gift, you don't expect somebody to go right out and buy you one in return.
That's right.
And you probably will at some point get a reaction. Thank you very, very much for doing this.
You're welcome, Janet.
Until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And please remember that if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, writing a love letter is a special occasion, and almost every experience in life is an occasion to write a love letter, even though you may not be aware of it. Till next time, bye-bye.